Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle.
Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing. Online marketing. Social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
So, peeps, I've never done this before, but I did an interview with Mark S.A. Smith last week, and there was so much content in there, I had to split it into two podcasts. He covered so much great content, and there were really two different subjects. So today we're going to take the second half of that and provide it to you. So if you want to learn Mark's backstory or learn better ways to get a hold of him, go to the first podcast, which was episode 195, and you can listen to all that at the beginning and end. But today we're going to learn about the second part of the subjects that we were talking about, which was how to land a whale. So sit back, relax, and get ready to learn something, because a man drops some incredible knowledge bombs.
So I'm sure you've heard the old joke is, how do you eat an elephant?
I've never heard that before. How do you eat an elephant?
One bite at a time.
Of course I've heard that joke. I love it, but thanks for the punchline. I always prefer barbecue sauce.
I don't blame you at all, but so... So my question to you is, okay, we're talking about eating elephants, but how do you land a whale? I mean, it's like, how do you get those bigger customers to pay attention to you? Because that's always what we're looking for. Yeah, so many people have told me over the course of the years is, stop selling to poor people.
Yes. Yeah, marketing 101, sell to people with money.
Right.
Okay, marketing 102, when you're sold out, raise your prices.
Mm-hmm.
Sales 101, your job is to scale as safely as you possibly can. So, yes, those are two important things. So how do you land whales? I love that. The reason why my corporate clients hire me is because they have complex, expensive products that their salespeople don't know how to sell. And so I help them figure out how to sell expensive stuff. And the thing you have to understand when it comes to landing whales is, there, if we take a look at products and services, we could lump them into one of two discrete categories. Category one is a tactical product. That is a product that is purchased to accomplish a task. A tactical product is, I'm thirsty. I want something to drink. So the drink you purchase is tactical because it quenches your thirst. Or it could be, I need a printer to print stuff on paper. Quite frankly, it doesn't matter whose printer you buy. They're all going to print on paper within a tenth of 1% of quality of each other. There's almost no differentiation in those products. So you're going to go out there and you're going to be persuaded one way or the other. Could be brand. That's why HP owns the printer market. And even though their ink is liquid gold or liquid plutonium, how it depends on how you want to look at that, We choose them because they deliver. But that's a tactical product. And it really doesn't matter what you buy. It doesn't matter if you buy Dasani or Evian, your thirst will be quenched. Now, with Evian, you're going to do it in style. But it's fundamentally a task. At the other end of the spectrum are products that are strategic, and they're purchased to accomplish a mission. So if you buy a tactical product and you screw up, no big deal. You can buy another one, and nobody's going to die. Now, for a mission-critical product, for a strategic product, if you don't choose it right, it can tank your company. And so those tend to be very expensive. They tend to be high consideration purchases, versus tactical products tend to be low consideration or habitual purchases. Now, depending on what end of the scale you are on, depends on how you market the product and, more importantly, how you sell the product. A tactical product is features, advantages, and benefits. A strategic product is outcome. We buy a tactical product because we have some brand experience. We may have a preference, or it could just be convenience. And that's the end of the spectrum, Brian, where people purchase typically on price. I'm going to buy the cheapest bottle of water because I'm just thirsty, and it's water, for God's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, at the high end of the spectrum, for the strategic product, for the mission-critical product, price is almost never the factor, unless you're selling to the government. It is, do they trust you to deliver what you say you're going to deliver? Because making a bad decision with a strategic product is critical. So when you're working with whales, you're on the strategic side of the spectrum, not the tactical side of the spectrum. It's a completely different approach to marketing, to selling, to creating relationships. Now let's compound this. When there is a high consideration sale, there is usually more than one person involved. And when you have multiple people involved, each of them have a different set of motivations that they're going to be using to make their decision. Each of them have a different set of key performance indicators that they are going to look for support if they're going to make their decision. So let's just play for a moment. Let's say that we're selling somebody an expensive computer, expensive software. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a team involved in making that purchase. There's going to be a business decision maker, probably a CEO. We're going to have a financial decision maker, probably a CFO. And then we're going to probably have a technical decision maker. So it'll be the IT guy. Sometimes they call those CIOs, chief information officers, or something like that. So those are typically the three people that are going to ultimately say, yep, this is what we're going to buy. So what do you think is the IT's key performance indicator? That is, when it's high, they stay, and when it's low, they go, and I mean they get fired right away. What do you think it might be, Brian, being a technologist? What do you think that CIOs are looking for when they buy computer equipment?
Well, they're looking for a lot of different things. Integration, they're looking for longevity, they're looking for...
None of that gets them fired. What gets them fired?
Oh, what gets them fired? When it doesn't work.
Yeah, right. Their key performance indicator is uptime. Is it working?
Right.
And the instant it quits working, their job's at risk. That is a career-limiting event.
Mm-hmm.
It's really clear for a technologist is, does it work? Does it keep working? If it breaks, can I fix it fast? And that's all you got to talk about. All that rest of the stuff is noise. Because if they don't think that what you're going to deliver is going to work and become invisible, their computer systems become invisible, that's what CIOs want, is invisibility. Don't notice me, please. That's what they care about. All the rest of the stuff is noise. So when you can figure out their key performance indicator, which is in the case of a CIO, is uptime, that's what I sell. I give them all the proof I possibly can that this is a reliable solution, it's going to stay up and running, and everything else is secondary. Now, you'd think that a technologist like you and me, you know, us geeks, we would love to buy the latest and greatest stuff. Well, we do because we're the single decision maker, and it's us on the line. If it breaks, oh, well, that's why you and I are buying leading-edge technologies. But you don't do that with a CIO because leading-edge technology has flaws. And we've all been burned by new technology. And for those guys, if you're selling them something brand new out of the box with no test, no history, no nothing, they're going to say no because that's too risky.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to sell to that. Now we have to sell to the CFO, the finance guy. So what do you think is the key performance indicator for a finance guy? What do you think?
ROI. Is it going to make us money?
Yeah, you'd think so, but that doesn't get them fired. What gets them fired?
When they lose money?
Not pretty much, but that's not. They don't get fired for that either, because really think about it. CFOs are historians. They are reporting what everybody else in the organization is doing to contribute to cost and profitability. They're reporters.
Mm-hmm.
So one more time, my friend, what gets them fired?
Having an affair with the CEO's wife. Best answer I can give.
I love it. And actually, the CEO might say, thank you. Take my wife, please. Good old Hen Youngman joke. Yes. No, what, it's being out of money. Running out of money gets them fired. Cash flow. A CFO's job is to control cash flow. Their job is to make sure that vendors and employees get paid, because if they can't meet payroll, they get fired along with everybody else. A CFO thinks every day about cash flow. How can I improve cash flow? And nothing else matters. ROI doesn't matter. It's nice, but it doesn't get them fired. And there's one other thing that gets them fired, and that's compliance, being out of compliance, making sure the tax docs are filed, making sure that the data is safe. Sarbanes-Oxley just absolutely screwed businesses because of the reporting requirements. In fact, you can go to jail if you miss out on the compliance. Today, for CFOs, ROI stands for risk of incarceration. It is ugly. CFOs say, I don't look good in orange.
I was going to say, orange is the new black.
Yes, it is, but CFOs don't want to go there. So the thing is that a lot of us believe it is ROI. It's not. ROI is nice, but the key performance indicator is cash flow and compliance. So you see, what we have to do when we're selling to whales is change our viewpoint and understand what keeps their job, what gets them fired. And it goes both ways. There's a little pain there, yes, but there's also the dream side of it that really elevates. So the last one's actually really easy. CEO, what do you think is a CEO's key performance indicator?
Success of the organization.
And how do we measure that success?
By income, generally speaking, or actually it's more shareholder return on investment.
Yes! Yes! Ding, 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 ding! You're a winner!
Yay!
Have some bacon. Yes, it's shareholder value. That's exactly what they get paid on, and nothing else matters. And the way that shareholders determine value is going to be some combination of profitability and growth. And if you're making a hell of a lot of money, you don't have to grow very much, and if you're growing like crazy, you don't have to make a lot of profits. Jeff Bezos did that with Amazon for a very long time, but that's the secret of shareholder value. So when you're selling to whales, you have to talk about five things, specifically if we're talking technology. That's uptime, cash flow, compliance, profit, and growth. Those are the five conversations you're going to have, and you've got to prove that what you are going to deliver supports all five of those things, and if you miss any one of them, they will say no. So we're changing it up. It becomes strategic in that we're selling them outcome. It becomes important that we have multiple people with different viewpoints that require different proof structures. And so it becomes a little more complex. But it's worth it. It is so worth it because you go from $10 deals to $10,000 to $100,000 deals. I'm going to brag just a moment. The largest deal I did as a solopreneur was $2 million. And I had to hire a whole bunch of people to deliver, but it was a really sweet deal. And it was to one big whale. And that really launched me into figuring out how to sell to a lot of other whales. Now, because of the change in the economy, I may do that much, but it's not a single contract. These days, contracts are much smaller, but they do them serially because they're trying to control, and they're trying to put in cut-and-run points instead of being locked in.
Sure.
So it's just a different environment today than it was back in the aughties, but it's so much fun to do those kind of deals with whales. It's really a lot of fun. So let's try this. Let me throw you this question, Brian. So what are some common criteria that executives consider when they're looking at purchasing? Go for that.
That's a really good question. Common criteria is reputation, reliability, referrals, trust, relationships, a ton of things.
Yeah, there are. There's a whole ton of things there. Let me share with you some that I have learned along the way.
Mm-hmm.
First of all is viability. Will you be in business to support us over the long run?
Right.
Now, for small businesses, that can be a challenge. And so you have to put together a way of showing them that you're viable and will retain viability. And that probably is the number one thing that kills small businesses landing whales, is will you be in business to support us? The next one is scalability. Can you grow with their needs? And in my particular case, I was able to very rapidly add highly talented people to fulfill the contract. But that was a big question, and they really, the way that we got through that was with pilots. We did small pilots, proof of concept. I brought in some new people. They performed better than I did. No surprise. And that allowed us to scale up. So you need to develop that scalability plan, figure that out. And it's also extremely common if you are looking to sell yourself to a whale. Are you scalable, or does all of the horsepower, secret sauce, superpower lie within a single individual. If it's within a single person, you can't scale. I'm a process guy. I'll sell you a process. And you can't, I'm not scalable in the fact that I can invent a billion processes. I can sell people processes to create processes. So there are ways of doing that. The next thing you're going to look for is manageability. How can we manage this project with this company? So here's an important thing to write down. An executive will never say yes to a project they don't know how to manage.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's so important, I'll say it again. An executive will never say yes to a project they don't know how to manage. So you have to show them how to manage it. You have to provide timelines and milestones and measurements and KPIs so they can quickly keep the project on track and they know when it's going off track so they can step in and intervene. A good executive never micromanages, but they do watch it like a hawk. So far we've talked about viability, scalability, and manageability. Something else they're going to look at is payback time. So while you talked about ROI, one of the things I've learned in doing research, before I do any kind of marketing project, Brian, I always do research. Well, I've been doing it a long time. I don't know all the answers, and it's a moving target. I have to go out and re-aim every time. And so I just recently finished a project for a $7 billion company. Yep, I did meet with the executive team. It's really interesting when you work with the execs that work with that are running a $7 billion company. Their world is not my world.
mm-hmm.
it's a lot of fun. And so they're selling software for the very first time in their history. So they asked me to help them figure out how to bring that software product to market. I went out and interviewed 63 executives to figure out how executives buy this type of software. And we figured out we have to sell to whales. And along the way, we figured out that our target market has a specific requirement. They have to have profit and loss responsibility. They have to be, if they're responsible for P&L, we can sell them the software. If they're not going to buy. And that to me was, in retrospect, it shouldn't be a surprise, but it was when we did the research. But I asked every one of those executives, so what kind of ROI are you expecting? And every one of them to a person said, I expect to get payback between 12 and 18 months. They switched the ROI conversation from a percentage to how quickly they could get the money back that they invested. So one of the things that's important to think about when you're working with whales is they may think about ROI in a completely different way than you do. And, of course, the outcome is we changed our messaging to talk about payback time, and we dropped the concept of ROI. We don't even talk about ROI anymore. We talk about payback time. Typical customers can pay for this completely in 6 months or less. But I wouldn't have figured that out. If I had said ROI, I would have created resistance. But since I'm talking about payback, we're talking their language.
Totally agreed. So, Mark, you know, you've talked about working with whales. We've eaten the whale one bite at a time. You talked about the five, you know, different messages that you have to get across with these different people, the IT person. And I mean, it could be even further than that. It could be the sales manager. It could be the accounting team, the marketing team, whatever it is. Yes. You've really got to think in those different things. But give me an example of where you've worked with a whale that you've been able to align them in a way that has greatly increased their business and their ability to serve their customers better.
Oh, I'd love to share that with you. A couple of preludes to that. Number one, doesn't it seem easier to eat a whale than an elephant? I mean, most people prefer sushi over elephant meat.
As long as it's cooked. I'm not an uncooked fish kind of guy, and I've seen beached whales, and I don't know. Neither one is very appealing to me. So
appetizing. All right.
Exactly. Thank you. But I would assume it would be. Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Yeah, so whale is way better with some soy sauce.
Let's amen. That yeah, one. Or wasabi.
All right. yes. All right. I love it. Second thing is, yes, the point that we made here is that every person who's part of that decision-making team for a considered purchase, for a strategic purchase, has a different KPI, a different motivator. You got to figure that out. In this podcast, we just talked about three, but in some deals, there can be 15 or 20, which get really complex, and you got to figure that out. I can help you figure that out if you'd like help, or we can have another podcast and pick a market, and we'll tear that apart. Those are all good. So, yes, in 2005, one of my clients came to me and said, you know, one of our biggest customers has only had 5% of their salespeople sell this new product that they're betting the farm on. They really truly believe that this is the new direction for their company. They really want to amp up the sales. Can you help us move that from 5% to 75%? And I took a look and I said, oh, sure, great. It's a disruptive product. The old school of selling a similar product was you sold to a particular function in the organization, and this one required for you to move up two levels in the organization to sell it. We moved from a tactical product to a strategic product as they were developing this. So they were using tactical strategies or tactical approaches to sell this product, and they needed strategic approaches. So we put together a specific three-part training approach that allowed us to change their salespeople's view of how to sell this, and then the technologist view of how to sell it, and then the management view of how they should approach this. And so we talked about how do you sell a disruptive product. It's always about outcome. It's never about how. So we had to get out of the how part of the company into the strategic part of the company. Essentially, we turned it from a technologist sale into a CEO sale, a C-level sale, a board of directors level sale. The end result is after 1,000 days, this program took 3 years to complete. It was a massive program. We took them from 24% market share to 64% market share, and they ended up doing $2 billion worth of business in the third year in this particular technology. And I got to tell you, I learned an enormous amount about the things that I'm sharing with you today during that 1,000-day event. They ended up taking me and my team to 36 countries around the world. It was extraordinary. And I tell you what, that's when I got a real taste for selling and eating whales.
Yeah, I bet. And octopus and a few other things you've never heard of before.
That's exactly right. So that's really what allowed me to make that turn from being a small entrepreneurial company like your listener and moving to the let's go after some whales. And now I'm sold. I just want whales. It's because they're so much fun, and they definitely take you to better restaurants, and they buy better liquor, and the people are way more intelligent. It's really an interesting situation. And perhaps, Brian, someday we can talk about executives and their mindset. That might be an interesting podcast sometime in the future.
I'd love to do that. Mark, you could probably do my podcast every week with me and never run out of stuff to talk about. Hey, Mark, this is such great content, man. I so appreciate you and your insights, and you dropped some incredible knowledge bombs again on my peeps. So thanks, man, so much for coming on the show.
I love it. It's excellent.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.